And, you know, with the proper use of the breath, as we've discovered, one moves into a still point. And you'll remember that what the ancient scripture said was, be still and know where the Creator resides. And that connectedness, that full use of the breath, is what ultimately connects us to those deepest places of knowing. And you can't get that with your head. It only comes from doing your work. And so we're looking to restore, maybe hopefully inspire people to understand and use the protocol, the tools that Yeshua offered. You know, when you look at the Greek interpretations of the ancient Aramaic teachings of the man Yeshua, the main thing that's missing is the how-to, or the understanding that when the how-to is being described, that's what's being described. Now, I was thinking about, you know, we've started into the Beatitudes, and I was thinking about the Beatitudes and how to really get the import of what these instructions are, because it's an instruction set. It's not a nice philosophy. It's a set of instructions. And so let's imagine that, I don't know, what came to mind was someone's learning needlepoint. So there's some kids learning needlepoint. And what are we going to do to teach them needlepoint? Well, we're going to teach them that, you know, there's a piece of cloth we're going to work with, and there's some colored threads and there are needles. And then we're going to give them a set of instructions for how to produce a result called this beautiful needlepoint that they're about to do. So each step proceeds producing a result. Each set of instructions. You know, if I have to stretch the cloth on the hoop. If I don't stretch the cloth on the hoop, I'm never going to get a decent needlepoint. And, you know, if the sun is up in one corner of it, then I'm going to take the yellow thread and I'm going to create the sun, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And each of those is about producing a result. So we could imagine that the child that's learning to do needlepoint, the little guy or the little gal that's learning to do needlepoint, is, oh, so in order to get this result, I have to start here. And then each step, oh, I put it on the hoop. I stretch it. I tighten it. I get out the threads of the color I'm going to use. I have the layout, and I put each color in its proper place. And each of those is a step for producing a result. If you think of the, you know, and this is like, again, what we're looking to do with this work is to, or with this particular inquiry into the Enlightenment book, we're looking to get that Aramaic mindset. So the kid knows that each step is going to produce this result. When you look at the Beatitudes, Yeshua is offering a set of instructions for producing a result. You know, with the needlepoint, you might say, well, your first task is going to be to gather all of the different colors of thread you're going to use, and the needles that you're going to use, and the hoop, and the cloth, and the picture that you're going to use. You're going to gather all those things. And then you're going to produce this result. So what the Beatitudes start out with, and you know, put this into context, each Beatitude starts out with the result that you're going to produce if you realize that this is an instruction set. It's not a nice philosophy. It's an instruction set for producing a result. So imagine that, you know, if you were talking to the kid about doing the needlepoint, and say, well, in order to produce the result of that beautiful needlepoint over there that you want to make a copy of, you're going to have to get the hoop. You're going to have to get the needles. You're going to have to get the thread. So in order to produce that result. And so before each of the Beatitudes, again, there's a word that the Greeks interpreted, and I'm going to say they didn't translate it. It's not even close to a translation, but it's an interpretation. And they said, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they. And they totally leave the result out. But here's what the result is in that word tuvehun that's in front of each of the Beatitudes. The Creator implanted in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they are active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent or unconscious guidance system that's designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. Tuvehun. So before each instruction, there's a statement of the result. And so when you look at this and then you apply it. So the first one, as we said yesterday, we started there, was you who have a home in Rucha. And if you look those words up in the dictionary, that, you know, some people, even out of the Aramaic, will translate a home in the breath, but in Aramaic, it doesn't actually say the breath. It does say Rucha, which is the first part of the breath. In the ancient Aramaic, when they said, or the Greeks again, interpreted, they said God sent out his spirit. It speaks of the Creator sending out Rucha Dikutcha, an elemental force for that which is proper for humans, the breath. And in this particular instruction, in the first Beatitude, it doesn't speak of Rucha Dikutcha, it just speaks of Rucha. And Rucha is a general word for each and every one of the elemental forces. There's a specific one, Rucha Dikutcha, for humans, but it doesn't say the breath here. It says Rucha, you who live in the eternal active forces from God, from the Creator. So if you're in tune with the energies that surround you, the elemental forces that surround you, if that's your home, instead of living in a construct in your mind, a reality that your mind is outputting that you think is about somebody else, or you think is actually looking at somebody else, when the realities constructed by your mind are simply reflections of the content of your mind. So what this one is inviting us to do, to activate this underlying neural structure, this which is, in most people, they specifically say is latent, or we would say unconscious, in order to activate it, your home needs to be, you need to be attuned to the energy around you. Now, that can be kind of difficult to do if you only ever surround yourself with artificial energy. That's why a lot of people get a lot of peace and solace from going out into the woods. What happens in the woods? You're surrounded by those eternal forces. There are no artificial interruptions for those forces. The noise of the you know, air conditioning or heating system, the noise of the TV in the background, the colors bouncing off of the walls, all the artificial, you're actually in those eternal forces. And they've shown that it is a major boost to health to just go out and spend time in a forest. When you make your home in those eternal forces, when you give yourself over to an environment that taps you into those energies rather than the artificially implanted and the stimulus of, you know, the noise of the fire, the sirens and the cars and the, you know, all the stuff that's going on, you need to take time. And this ties in with that statement that said, be still and know, be still and connect. And if you do that, then the result that it offers, aside from, or the impact of producing this result, will be to activate this guidance system in you. And in Aramaic, rather than, as the Greeks translated, you'll be in the kingdom of heaven. What it says in Aramaic is, yours will be a heavenly estate. Melkuta d'shmaya. You'll be in those energetic patterns that reinforce your human beingness rather than the constructs of the mind that keep us busy thinking that every challenge or problem we have is out there. Just simply getting into that deepened state. I actually had a gentleman that was traveling through the last couple of days, and I spent some time working with him in particular and moving into those deeper states. And the result is physiological, mental, emotional, and spiritual transformation. So that's the first of the Beatitudes. The next one speaks of the Abili. And in Aramaic, the Abili, there was a community, there was a group of people whose whole thing was owning the errors that they made and cleaning up their minds. Seeing through the brainwashed or programmed errors of the society. These were the Abili. And their focus was to completely and totally honor truth. So this second beatitude says, you who honor truth and profess your errors and the errors of your society. In other words, if I'm in error, I'm going to undo my blockage of truth. I'm going to choose to be with the truth and own my own errors and own what I've been brainwashed into by the culture. You shall be, in the Aramaic word nitbeun, freed of mental stress. Now you look at how many people in our culture live in sympathetic dominance continuously. Their nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, is for so many people always set for fight, flight, fright, freeze, or fawning. And that's what their whole lives are made up of, because they've been in such an environment of fear. And you look at how many times the ancient scriptures instruct how destructive that state of fear is. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of times. There's a myth out there, and I've never bothered to count them, but there's a myth out there that says there are 365 times that the scriptures talk about not living in fear, letting go of fear. And I know that one time I did count through, and I think it was 15 or 16 times, Yeshua says that. Fear sets up the autonomic nervous system to shortchange, to create blood flow that goes to the larger muscles into the lungs so that we can fight or run. It cuts off blood flow to the higher functions of the brain. And so now one goes into, when one lives in that fear state, and, you know, it boggles my mind when we hear thousands of preachers who tell us that fear is the beginning of wisdom, especially fear of love, fear of the Creator. Like, how crazy is that? So that Beatitude does not speak about mourning your wrongs. Classically, historically, that Beatitude is interpreted as, blessed are those mourning their wrongs, for they will be comforted. Well, anybody ever get warm heart cockles from sitting around woo, 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 about what you did that was wrong? No. This is an active state of the action of love, owning whether or not there are errors in one's own mind or of their society, and bring them to correction. And freeing yourself of the stress created by that. And when that mental stress is created, when fear is gone, then blood flow is literally restored to the eliminative system, to the colon, literally restored to the spleen, to the liver, to the heart, to the brain, and particularly to the frontal lobes of the brain. That's what the result is, being cured of mental stress. And again, if we have this tightness of fear, that's what shuts down this guidance system that the Creator gave us, and our mind is always populating itself with all the dangers and all the things that can go wrong and all the things that are wrong with us. I mean, this is just so pragmatic and so practical. When it's understood as the words fell from Yeshua's mouth, but in Aramaic, it's kind of like, or in Greek, pardon me, it's kind of like, well, there's this kind of nice philosophy that this guy spoke about. He was standing up on a high hill, and he talked about this thing. It was kind of cool. And then they'll tell you that you're supposed to be poor in spirit, and you're supposed to mourn. No. No. You want your home in the eternal forces from the Creator. And that connectedness to the active presence of love. And you want to be able to, yes, profess your own errors and the errors of your society, the things you've been brainwashed into, and free yourself from mental stress, which means open blood flow throughout your whole structure rather than set your physiology, your nervous system to fight or run. The next beatitude, you who have makik. Now this one's, again, historically interpreted as, blessed are the meek, they shall inherit the earth. Well, there are two things that are off base here. First of all, meek, how is that pretty much in the Greek, this Greek-based language that we have called English? What does meek usually imply? Weak, flabby, you know, kind of like, you put your head down. That's not it at all. Not even close, the instruction set. So here's the result. The Creator implants in your mind neurostructures which will guide you when they're active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. You who have humility, that is, you who have the mental quality of perceiving and cooperating with the good desires of others. It's just slightly different than slinking around being meek. And what's the result, the direct result of that particular instruction set, aside from being part of what activates this underlying guidance system that is in us? It doesn't say you will inherit the earth like it's some sort of a passive thing. You just stand around and it comes to you. But actually, it's a very active thing. And the word nartun, which is the Aramaic word that's translated as inherit the earth, actually it says gain. In Aramaic, it's gain the earth. In other words, your sphere of connectedness will expand beyond your own perceptual constructs into your connectedness with the earth. And then the next beatitude, well, we've done three of them. Let's see if we've got anybody. We're at the 22-minute mark. Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Just want to kind of check in and see if anybody's got anything on their minds before we jump into this next beatitude.
There are no hands up right now and no questions in the chat room. And I checked my email and I don't have any questions there that we haven't answered.
Cool. Okay. Well, then the next beatitude, historically interpreted as, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they shall be filled. Actually, it's a much more detailed and active thing. It's not like, you know, you just sort of passively, oh, I wish I had. And we hear people talking about their righteous anger as though anger could possibly be compatible with a human life, could possibly make space in a human form for the actual presence of love. The state of anger and the state of human life of love are mutually exclusive energetic patterns. The filter that opens the gateway for love to come into our form is closed down by hostility. And so this beatitude is, you who hunger for the mind structure, it's talking about how you manage your mind, the mind structure underlying the attitude, judgment, and behavior. So it includes all three things, attitude, judgment, and behavior, described as just and fair behavior between people. And you look at how much unfairness, how much selfishness, how much greed there is in the world. You look at the, you know, I mean, look in the political realm right now at the lies that pass as converse, just general conversation. There's no justice and fairness in those words. And, you know, if you take this one in particular and you tie it in with that story we've told so often about, and you know, this whole instruction set would be part of what would be entailed in Yeshua's answer when this group of disciples said, well, what do we need to do to please the Creator? And Yeshua tells him, he gives him an idiom for it, and half of his audience grumbled, this is a hard saying, who can understand it? And they leave. They leave and they never come back. This would be one of the things that was included. You're going to have to do the healing work on your mind so that the first thing that comes to mind whenever something is going on between you and someone else is just and fair behavior rather than self-centered self-interest. And the result is in the Aramaic here is kind of inherent in itself, is that when you have that mind structure, then you will attain. You will have people who will treat you justly and fairly. And we talked about it before, the test that I kind of take as sort of entertaining. But the test in the Course in Miracles that you can apply to determine where you are in terms of your work. And the test goes like this. Remember, it's a two-part test. And the first part of it is, when you think of anyone, are you in a state of perfect peace? And then the more difficult part of the test is, when anyone thinks of you, do they share your perfect peace? And if they don't, then you have an energetic hook on the level of mind energy that keeps that pattern going between you and them. When everything that is unlike, literally, and in Aramaic, it's saying with this particular beatitude, there is a literal mind structure. There is a neural structure that, when active, will guide you to an attitude, judgment, and behavior that will produce and incline you toward just and fair behavior no matter what. And then the next beatitude, historically interpreted as, blessed are the merciful, they shall obtain mercy. In Aramaic, we're back to the word rachma in this beatitude. So you who have pure love, you who have the mind structure, the gateway, the filter open for the presence of your human life, and that state of humanness, that created human essence that is love, will bring forward judgment and behavior that reflects that presence of love. So that you are so strongly incarnated in your human form that every assessment you make of what's going on in life and every behavior that you do will be based in love. And the result of that one in Aramaic is that you will receive that in return. That as you become that, as that becomes the prime mover in your structure, then it becomes the prime attractant in your life, the prime energy that brings results to you. If other results are showing up in your life, then know that there's just another level of work to do. Because nothing, you know, there's a great line in the Course in Miracles is, nothing can come to you that was not your choice. You are not a victim of the world you see. And so what Yeshua is saying here is, you've got to do the work to keep this gateway open called Rachma, keep this presence of your human life. Whenever your mind is engaged, whenever karma-based memory is engaged in any kind of judgment or is moving you toward behavior. So it's not about being merciful. It's about literally living in and as the presence of love, and that the major energy that runs your physiology, no matter what somebody else in the world does, that the major energy that runs your physiology is that of love. And the person who can resonate something other than that, the person can resonate fear or frustration or rage or intimidation or, you know, whatever, is the person that's showing you the part of your own mind that is not yet connected to your human life. And when every part of your mind is connected to your human life, this will be part and parcel of what it takes to bring these neural structures in that were implanted in you from the very beginning. And what you'll find is, with that neural structure active, thoughts and actions that just naturally bring about happiness and well-being become part of your process. You don't hold your breath and curse somebody under your breath or sit there putting up with them, or, you know, you take responsibility for it and you clean up your own mind so that there is nothing left in you. If you want perfect health, if you want perfect peace, if you want this neural structure active, you have to take responsibility for your physiology falling in line with your human beingness. And you'll see in the next beatitude that includes purifying your own mind. And so the next beatitude, again, historically interpreted as, blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see God. And, you know, I can think of, you know, being a kid in church and such, and it was kind of like, well, you know, if you have impure thoughts, where this is Yeshua saying, this is Yeshua, the word in Aramaic is Dadsian, and he's offering an active process to do. He's saying you have to actively purify your own mind. And as you actively purify your own mind, and it's not about seeing God, it's not about your eyes visualizing the Creator, the Aramaic word, if you have that purified mind, is mihazun, and it implies that you'll step in to a new level of comprehension of what the Creator is, Allah, the invisible source of creation. So you'll come into a more direct relationship with the invisible, unknowable source of creation. a comprehension that the intellect just isn't capable of. The next beatitude, and this one is one that I think, to me, when I read this one, I recognize that there is a rent due for living on planet Earth, and this is it. So the Greeks translate this one as, "Blessed are the peacemakers, they shall be called the children of God." And the word here is abde in Aramaic, and there is an element here of service, and this is where I kind of see this as our rent, that we're here to serve life. And when we work effectively to produce shlama, the peace and understanding, under in accord with the Creator's will, then we will be called the offspring, or the extensions, or the children of the Creator. So, putting effort into serving humanity, serving life, and working effectively to produce that state of peace and understanding, rather than, you know, a power game, a power structure, where we're going to go out and, you know, arrange the world so we can get things. It becomes a willing state of service that takes us into something quite different than the greed that pretty much runs most of the world. So through service, to work effectively to produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with the Creator's will. And we're heading up to the next one in the Beatitudes. Again, preceding each of them, the Creator planted in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they're active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will then come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. Tuvelun. And here, the implication is that you're going to be the space where everything less than love, it's like when you become the space that shines the light of love, then Kinuta, one who stands as that space of love, it will tend to open up in people's minds those parts of themselves that are not based in love. And he was warning that, you know, in a violent, vicious world, if you do that, there are going to be some people, but they're not going to be very happy with you. And so you may be scorned as a result of that, because you won't go along with the program. You speak up for truth. And once again, if you step into that space, then what it speaks of here is you're going to enter into a deeper relationship with the community of love. Again, in Aramaic, the words kingdom of heaven are not about some place off in the sky. It speaks of the community of love. In Aramaic, Malkuta Dishmaya. The next beatitude, once again, preceded by, here's the result you'll produce. You'll be, this is the way you activate that deeper neural system, neural structure. And it, again, reinforces the idea that there may be some people aren't going to be happy with you. They may harass you. They may scorn you. An Aramaic red peon. They may be deceitful with you. And you'll easily become the place where others project what they haven't dealt with yet. And what that will do is it will give the individual who's not a member of the one world universal religion of blame, you know, who every construct that comes up in their minds doesn't get projected onto everybody else, where that person will get to do the next subtle level of their own inner work as attack comes from the outside. You know, back in the early days of doing this work, I would have people who, when I was traveling, would want to come on the road. And pretty much universally, the result when people did do that would be that being on the road with me was like being in a full-time intensive. And that's just, you know, a part of the process. Miss Cheney, before we move to the next thought, anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? We're down to about 20 minutes. If there's any processing to be done, I'd like to leave space for that. So if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, then by calling into the show directly on your phone, 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. Gene will know you want to talk.
Hand.
Well, let's say hello.
Susan, 610, you're on the air.
Hi.
Well, welcome to your heart. Stuff. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
Little brain cells firing all along the way. I listened to a near-death experience podcast. I've never done that before, but somebody, Steve, came in, and I listened to it, and the man,
right,
he was dead for about 8 minutes, came back, had a wonderful experience on the other side, didn't want to come
right
back, found that his body was absolutely filled with energy. And he'd been brought up in a very traditional religious household, Christian, and he knew he couldn't talk to his parents about this. So he was 19 years old. He left. He went out to California, and he didn't tell anybody about what happened to him. And
wow,
it was disturbing to him because he was so filled with energy, and he could feel people's pain. Now, this, I won't ask you this question. This isn't the question, but I noticed he said that when someone was depressed, he went there with them, and it was very painful. If somebody
right
was feeling real joy, he loved that, and he went there with them.
Right.
So he kind of
so
isolated
take,
himself.
Well,
okay,
before we move too far from that thought, my offering would be that he'd opened the veil in his own temple to his own pain. So now, if someone resonated that pain, of course, you know, we there's a whole cadre of people that call themselves empaths.
Yeah.
And the empath says, oh, I'm feeling your pain, therefore I'm in pain. And I say to the empath, no, that pain in that other person is resonating your pain. Get about doing your forgiveness work, and you'll get to another level of healing. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, right. there are people who, you know, step into that empathic state, but the only thing they're feeling is what's moving in themselves. And that would be the space, having had that near-life experience, really it's not near death, it's near life, that now he's opened up the next level of opportunity. You know, remember I talked earlier about the tests in the Course in Miracles for telling where you're at in your work. One, if I think of anyone, am I at perfect peace? And two, do they share my perfect peace? And so the person who would have a near-life experience like that, that opens the veil of their, my understanding of that would be opens the veil of their own denial, is now going to be confronted face-to-face with everything in them that they haven't dealt with. And in the presence of another person, that's going to tend to bring that up. If they can own it, breathe, and do their work, then they'll free themselves of that. Otherwise, the whole fantasy of I'm feeling your pain becomes the way the empath goes to a new level of denial.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that. You have explained that very well before, too. I do understand what you're saying. The question I had to do with the fact that in his trying to escape from all of the insights and awareness he had, he started drinking, smoking, drugs, got into a lot of trouble, and then somehow found his way out of it and is now making podcasts. If I find his name, it's not that long, maybe 20 minutes.
I'd love to hear
it. The one thing he said, that he said it is much easier for us on this plane to feel and act on hatred than it is on love. And yet love is the only answer. So my question is, what's that all about, that it's easier? Is that because we are separate?
I wouldn't agree with that at all. That to me is a totally, completely foreign thought. Right.
Yes,
so I'm just saying I disagree with that. Sure.
Yes.
And I disagree with that totally. What I would offer, and I think if you understood the energy dynamics of it, is that many people have intense generational hatred, rage, guilt, grief, pain, drama, and trauma, and it's easy for that stuff to be resonated into activity and take over the mind. Easier because mm-hmm. the number of people who've been raised in guilt and grief and rage and pain and trauma and alcohol and drugs and abuse is much higher than the number of people who've been raised in rockma. And so
mm-hmm.
It's easier to express it because there's a whole lot more energy behind it, a whole lot more intensity behind it.
Right.
But if one has done their work and cleaned up, as the Beatitudes are talking about here, has a completely sound and purified mind, it would be difficult for them to express some form of hostility or fear toward themselves or someone else. It would be difficult because the governing energy of their minds is Rachma, is the presence of love. And remember, that's what Yeshua says, the first order of business, if you're actually going to be human, is you've got to have this condition of Rachma in your mind. And with Rachma active, you can't express any form of hostility, fear, or negative behavior. It just can't happen. So there's a work, you know, we've all got a work to do.
So I found 954-205-4996.
We've got a text, but let's let go of that, yeah.
Say that again, Michael. I don't send it to that?
I'll send, yes, that's it. I just don't usually repeat it on the radio show.
Oh, sorry.
Remember, occasionally we have some strange listenings going on.
Yeah, okay, I just sent it to you.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Cool.
Well, you and I have had trouble connecting with each other, so that's why.
Yes. Yeah, I think yesterday we established that we finally got that text thing open, and so.
Well, we did one time. Who knows what's going to happen next
time. And I got a text from you.
You did? Yoo-hoo! Okay.
I did. It's in. So we are really fully connected now.
Back in business. Okay. Well, it's it's the most amazing story, but he had to leave his entire background in order to find out what had happened to him. And when you say that he probably was brought up in a way that hatred was big on the protocol there, in the, it must have been because he talked about his very rigid religious thing, and of course that points to a lot of fear and blame and you know, all kinds of things that Yeshua didn't mean. So he found himself, and his whole purpose in life now, I think, is to make these podcasts. Very interesting man.
Cool.
It makes me think of Danyon Brinkley in Saved by the Light when he had the near-life experience. I mean, he was clinically dead, and it actually happened to him several times, and he did not want to come back. And when he did, it was like he had abilities to tap in to areas that he hadn't before, and people didn't want to hear it. It made them uncomfortable. And so he also turned to drinking and doing things to try to suppress it. And he ended up, you know, his wife left him. He had to go try to find himself. So it sounds very similar to Daniel.
Wow, it is. This man's name is Holden Lee. H-O-L-D-E-N. He's probably in his 50s, maybe. Anyway, now. So it just was what he said was so consistent with what Dr. Tim is reading on, you know, the Way of Mastery, Course in Miracles, what you're teaching. And it's great that you're helping us find our way there without having to be bumped off first, you know, and then come back and have a brain injury and have it be such a kind of brain injury that we have insights that we don't know what to do with. It's like you're taking us inch by inch there without the trauma of the way he had to find his way there.
Yeah, that would be a heavy duty way to do it. And, you know, I think, I'm not sure now, but I think maybe the movie Saved by the Light is on YouTube free, I think. And anybody who's listening, if you want to watch a really deep, true story experience of a man who was struck by lightning. I mean, he was literally a hired government killer. We know Danyon. We've run across him several times over the years on when we were traveling and been on platforms together. And, you know, he's a guy that I acknowledge him in being part of the movie being made, and that he allowed him to tell the truth about what he was like as a kid, and he was a real SOB. But then when this near-life experience happens, everything changes, and I mean, literally in the movie, you can see how all the old unresolved stuff just sneaks back in and takes over his life again. But fortunately, he had this nagging experience of living as the presence of love, and, you know, went from literally being a military assassin. A couple of the scenes, it shows where he has to go back and process. He goes into this reverie, this in his near-life experience, and he goes back and he processes the kills that he made, those energetic patterns. He has to process through them. I mean, it shows how that played out for him. And then finally how he came to a state of resolution with, he was here now, realized that his job wasn't to be an assassin, his job was to be a healer. And, you know, we actually haven't seen him in probably 5 or 6 years. I haven't been in touch with him lately to see how he's doing. But sending love in his direction, I mean, he's had some powerful influence. I mean, he literally, as a military man, has sat at the bedsides of thousands of vets, just being there for them, assuring them out of his near-life experience that that's what was coming for them, rather than, you know, the fear and terror and trauma that people hadn't processed through. So he's done some really awesome work in the world. Danyon Brinkley, Saved by the Light.
Well, great. Thanks.
Yay. Well, I'll look forward to it. I do have that link, so thank you. I'll look forward to it. In fact, I'll maybe send it to Jeannie, and she can go ahead and put in the notes, too, if anybody wants to watch it.
Oh, okay.
Man dies knowing why life is very terrible.
Yeah, I know.
Why the soul chose a suffering life. Interesting.
Well,
that'd be an interesting watch.
Dr. Tim talks a lot about that because the book A Walk in the Physical by Christian Sundberg also explains he's one of these souls who came through with some glimmers of knowledge of his having chosen to come back and even set certain parameters for coming back. You know, he wanted to be an intelligent person, for instance. That was a choice, and they granted it. But he says, yes, we have to go through, and this guy says it too, we have to go through certain what appear to be horrific experiences in order to learn what we need to learn to come around to love again. But that's, you know, nobody would want to pick that exactly.
You know, my take on that would be that the horrific experiences we go through only because the energetic patterns for them are in us or in our genes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any, you know, the way I heard that statement that you made from him, as I understood it, is like, you know, well, you're going to get beat up by the universe because that's how you get to learn. My take wouldn't be that at all. You're going to get to live out whatever you hold in you, and it's either going to come into experience, which mm-hmm. if it's horrific, it's going to be pretty horrific, or you choose to do your work and forgive and remove those patterns. You know, there's that old law of karma. The law of sowing and reaping is absolute, and once we sow an energy into our fields, then we're going to get to live that out, or the alternative to living it out is understand what Yeshua is saying, develop this state of mind, and utilize the tools to remove those energetic patterns so you don't have to live them out. But I don't think there's a creator out there saying, oh, you have to go through terrible things in order to be fully human. We're created mm-hmm. fully human, and we give our human life up to those terrible things through generations and generations and generations yeah. of things that never belonged in human life. And I think it was in the book of Thomas, there's a lament that Yeshua offers, and he's looking at, you know, what people are doing and what people are going through, and he's like, how is it even possible for human life to have stooped to this? He's marveling, how did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And when we yield our creative power up to these states of generational or cultural patterns of hostility or fear, then yeah, we get to live them out only because we chose to engage, or we either chose or decided to engage in them. And so to replace choice with awareness of being, and then, you know, Yeshua says, okay, so here are the tools for activating, cleaning the game up so that we can get on to what humans are really here for. Like, what's it really all about, Alfie?
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And it's a relief to hear that. It's like it isn't just a roulette and we end up suffering a lot in order
right.
to find our way.
Exactly. Awesome. Any other thoughts for you?
The only thing you were saying in the Course in Miracles, if you're at peace with yourself, that's one thing. If the other person is at peace with you, then you've arrived. Well, I have a grandson who is definitely not at peace with me, and so I have to look at that. I don't know quite what to do with that.
I know what to do with it.
Worksheets.
All of the above, dear heart. All of the above. Every tool you've got.
But that doesn't guarantee that he's going to come around.
No, it doesn't guarantee that he's going to come around, but you'll reach a place where you are in that state of perfect peace. And remember, he comes out of the same genes you do. And mm-hmm. you know, just think about, you know, if we do the math, go back 30 generations. Scriptures talk about 3 to 4 generations, which is 31 lives. So if he's the inheritor, just go back 4 generations of the 30 lives that went before him, his mother and his father, and then you and him and his father's mother and father, and their parents and their parents, what do you suppose is unresolved in those 31 lives?
Oh, a lot.
So that's what we're being called to resolve. That's what we're being called to face, to deal with, and to literally forgive. So yeah, he is your offspring in a sense, energetically, and so what you haven't resolved, what hasn't been resolved in your bloodline, is going to tend to show up. And when I recognize, and I'm, you know, my own, you've heard me say this before, but for me, when I would have something happen and my intensity would come up from within and my mind would want to say, well, look what you've done to me, I would literally say to myself, this is my mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
To recognize, yep, okay, somebody's going crazy, somebody's doing, you know, horrible, terrible, all that, and their horrible, terrible, whatever it is, isn't the cause of my mental illness. If my response comes out of something less than love, that's my mentalness and my work and my opportunity to heal the bloodline at the next level. Mm-hmm. Would be my offering.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Breathing
again,
with you to your heart. All right. Appreciate you holding the space. Everybody, thanks for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the